Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to everyone in an effort to help them awaken to universal truth. If you want to learn about spirituality, the occult, and all things related to metaphysics, you are in the right place. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode. You know, for the past few episodes, I've definitely been focusing on the divine feminine from a goddess perspective. This week, I thought I would take a look a little bit more closely at some saints that one of them is, you know, quite popular, I think, but the other one, I'm not sure her story is actually well known, but I did want to kind of incorporate them into my own personal pantheon of the divine feminine, and I thought their stories were definitely different and a little interesting for myself as I was researching, but also I thought they would be interesting stories to cover this week. Additionally, what I wanted to tackle, in addition to their stories, was how to work with saints. You know, if you were raised, I would say Baptist or some other denomination of being a Christian in the South, I'm not sure that saints or their stories or focusing on the saints or any type of devotion towards the saints may have been a part of your religion. It certainly was not a part of mine. So it's definitely, for me, opening up a new door into learning about the saints and how to work with them. And I'll definitely be talking to you about that at the end of our episode today. The two saints I'm going to cover this week, Christina the Astonishing. Again, I don't think her story is that popular, but then St. Lucy of Syracuse, who I think is actually quite popular and has her own feast day. Let's begin by talking about Christina. So Christina was born in 1150 AD near Liege, Belgium. She was orphaned as a teenager and she worked as a shepherdess. Sometime in her early 20s, she suffered from a massive seizure. Some people think it was epilepsy. When this episode passed, she was found lying on the ground completely limp, and they were unable to detect a heartbeat when they found her, and supposedly she wasn't breathing, so she was pronounced dead. Soon after, there was a funeral held for her at her local parish. In the middle of the funeral service, she suddenly woke up. She was full of energy. She stood right up, just as if nothing had happened. When she realized that she was surrounded by a large group of people, she started levitating, and she flew all the way up to the roof of her church. And of course, the people were surprised. They were scared. Number one, that she was back to life, but number two, that she was, we'll call it levitating, or maybe we call it flying. So the priest who was there had actually ordered her to come down from the roof. Now, this would not be the first time that she, quote unquote, levitated. There were other episodes as well. And the reason that she levitated was because she couldn't bear to be around the stench of sinful people. This is something that I found repeatedly while I was researching, that people who carried a lot of quote unquote sin had this, I guess you could say, odor. When she finally stopped levitating at the funeral, she tells the people there that she had in fact died. Per her words, after her soul separated from her body, she was given a glimpse of the horrors of purgatory. She said that God gave her a choice: either remain dead and go to heaven, or return to earth and do penance for those who are in purgatory. And she was so moved at the sight of the people who were suffering in purgatory that she chose the latter. Therefore, boom, she said, in the next moment, she just came back to life. Now, after all of this, she took her penance very seriously. She voluntarily lived in extreme poverty, wearing only rags, and she lived without a home. She avoided human contact as much as possible. She was very introverted, and she avoided being around others. But even though she was introverted, that wasn't the reason why she was trying to avoid human contact. She would take extreme measures to avoid any contact, you know, obviously because of that stench. But she would do things such as climbing in the trees, hiding in ovens. She spent weeks alone. And supposedly, and this was also a really strange piece of historical information that I came across, she was nourished by her own breast milk. Take that as you want to. Now, her behavior is a little extreme, right? Usually when you hear stories of saints, it's kind of not like that. You usually traditionally hear stories of saints who very virginal, who are very, you know, generous, giving, who are martyrs in a way. So this behavior is very, God, I don't know why the word deviant came to my mind, because I don't think she's a deviant, but it's very different than what we traditionally hear from a saint. Now, her relatives, they were so embarrassed by her extreme behavior, because there's more to tell you here, but this was just some of her behavior. They were so embarrassed that they caught her and they restrained her in chains for her own good, but she escaped. Now, after, you know, she escaped, she needed to, she sought out ways to suffer to increase her penance. People watched her intentionally throw herself into fires and then remain there for extended periods of time. She would appear to be suffering greatly with terrible shrieking, but then she would exit the fire completely unscathed. She even allowed herself to be attacked by dogs, and she would intentionally run her body through these thorn bushes as well. In winter, she would immerse herself in a nearby river and remain in the nearly freezing water for hours or even days on end. As if this wasn't extreme enough, she would apparently even allow herself to be sucked into water wheels of nearby mills, getting stuck, you know, getting spun around essentially. Now, again, as painful and harmful as these things seemed to be for her, she would always emerge seemingly unharmed. Now, Christine's behavior was seen as very odd in her community, and it was disturbing to some people. So the townspeople got together and they prayed that God would, quote, temper his miracles in Christine and make her more like other people. So Christine had this baptism, and then she acted less strangely. However, she remained a beggar of her own choice in tattered clothes, and she continued to harm herself and weep and wail. Her relatives were still embarrassed, and they captured her, or had her captured again. The community didn't really know what to think about this woman, right? Because she seemed very erratic. And again, she would intentionally throw herself into fires. She would allow herself to be bitten by dogs. She would, you know, do these extreme actions, but yet every time she was completely unscathed, miraculously always healed or untouchable, essentially. So they were really divided about what to think about her extreme behavior and her antics, but yet this miraculous, if you want to call it miraculous healing. Was she insane? Or was she some sort of a holy woman sent to warn the people about the fires of purgatory, if we remember some of the first things that she said to them? Or was she perhaps possessed by a demon? Now, the latter possibility was taken seriously enough by some government officials, and she was actually jailed twice, though both times only briefly. Now, accusations of demonic possessions were quite a common response to women claiming divine inspiration in the Middle Ages. At one point when she was captured, her legs were intentionally broken and she was bound with chains. And truth be told, many people actually thought she was possessed by the devil and not a divinely inspired visionary. What's interesting here is that, you know, the community finally accepted her holiness when they saw her anointing her sores that she had from being restrained when she was jailed. She anointed them with this miraculous oil from her own breast, and then she freed herself, right? So the second time she actually escaped, she freed herself. But they were kind of convinced that this woman, despite her erratic behavior, was if you want to call it a saint or some sort of holy woman or mystic, they were quite convinced. And, you know, when she escaped the second time, she actually joined a Dominican monastery. And her prioress at this monastery said that despite her extreme behavior, she was always obedient. Her reputation, it spread across the region, and rulers and even holy people sought her out for advice, and spiritual aid. So again, despite her unpredictable antics, people actually looked at her as being some sort of, I guess we can call it, holy figure. Despite all of her self-inflicted physical abuse, she died at the age of 74 of natural causes, and she died July 24th, 1224, at St. Catherine's Convent in Belgium. Now, if you're finding all of this, you know, these stories hard to believe, of course you are. I mean, she's levitating, she came back from the dead, she threw herself, you know, in a bunch of fires, rolled around, and had nothing happen to her body, never really experienced any major pain, or if so, healed miraculously. I understand it can be very hard to believe, but there are people, you know, during the time who said they witnessed what happened. And there's a historian and a cardinal, his name is Jacques de Vitray, and he claimed to have been a personal witness to her incredible behavior. And he said he witnessed her going into the fires and emerging unharmed. And there are some contemporary saints as well who held her in very high regard, and they also sought her advice. There were even pilgrimages to her. Christina, she was never formally canonized. However, she was popularly considered a saint for centuries after her death. And there actually remains a strong devotion to her in Belgium. So she is the patronage against insanity, madness, mental illness, patron saint for psychiatrists. So she's a very interesting figure. In case you're wanting to learn more about her, I'm going to include a recommended reading. But this is literally all the information I could find out about Christine. There aren't many other details about her. But it's interesting because I was doing some extra research on possession and mystics, like female mystics during the Middle Ages. And there are kind of some similar stories about so-called female mystics, where instead of attributing to them this stature of being, you know, a spiritual mystic, more often than not, they were accused of demonic possession and then tortured and thrown into a fire or killed as a result. So I'm not surprised to see what happened to her. Okay, so that's the first saint that I wanted to discuss with you today. The second one might be more familiar to you, and she is Saint Lucy. Now, Saint Lucy, or Saint Lucia of Syracuse, which might be more familiar to you. You know, Lucy, her name means light or lucid. She's the patron saint of the blind. The oldest record of her story comes from the 5th century Acts of Martyrs, which you can find online or on Amazon. And the Acts of the Martyrs, these are accounts of the suffering and the deaths of the Christian martyrs, or at least the groups of Christian martyrs. And Lucy herself was a Christian martyr who died during the Diocletian persecution. On February 24th, in the common era of 303, the Roman Emperor I'm just going to say Diocletian because he has like five names. I think Diocletian is probably like the best way for me to approach this. He ordered the publication of his first edict against the Christians. And this edict in particular ordered the destruction of Christian scriptures and places of worship across the empire. And it prohibited Christians from assembling for worship. This was the beginning of the Diocletian persecution, which extended from 303 to 311. And this was the Roman Empire's last, largest, and bloodiest official persecution of Christianity. The earliest document referring to Saint Lucy was a marble inscription, which actually dates back to the 4th century, shortly after her death, and it was found in the catacombs of Saint John underneath the city of Syracuse. And this is where she would often go to pray with other Christians during the persecutions of Diocletian. So these catacombs in particular, they're the second largest early Christian catacombs in the world after the ones in Rome. Lucy was born to a noble family around the year 283 AD. Her father was Roman, but he died when she was 5 years old. Her mother was likely Greek, given her name Eutychia. I think that's how it's pronounced. I'm not really sure. Sorry if I totally butchered it here. So her mother, Eutychia, she suffered from what was called a bloody flux. She suffered for 4 years. And Lucy wanted to help her mom because obviously things have been really hard for her physically. And so she convinced her to go with her to St. Agatha's tomb. And she was the patroness of Catania, where she was. She believed that if they went there and they prayed together at Agatha's tomb, then her mother was going to be healed. So they stayed up all night praying until they fell asleep exhausted. Saint Agatha appeared in a vision to Lucy and said to her, supposedly specifically, "Soon you shall be the glory of Syracuse as I am of Catania." At that instant, Eutychia was supposedly cured. After this, Eutychia, in the background, decided upon herself to arrange a marriage for Lucy with a man who came from a very wealthy pagan family. But Lucy obviously is Christian, she's not pagan. And so she kind of urged her mom, like, "Hey, instead of me getting married and using this dowry to give to this pagan family that I don't want to be with, why don't we give it to, you know, to the community, to the people who need all this money?" And she said, "If we do that, then I'll be able to retain my virginity. I'll be like a pure Christian, etc., which is what I want. I don't want to get married." Pretty much this news about all of their money being redistributed, are being distributed amongst the community. It kind of gets back to this wealthy pagan family. And this man finds out that, oh, so she's giving away her dowry. She doesn't want to marry me. She's supposed to marry me. And he goes to this judge. And this judge, I'm probably going to butcher his name as well, Pisatius, God forgive. But he ends up going to this judge, this magistrate. And he tells her, he tells him, like, "Hey, she's supposed to marry me. She didn't honor what she was supposed to do. She's a Christian." He denounces her as a Christian, specifically to this magistrate. And so the magistrate orders her to burn a sacrifice in the emperor's image. And Lucy, you know, replies that, "No, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to marry this man as well." So they sentence her to be placed in a brothel, which, when I looked this up, was common practice when cases like this occurred. They would send a lot of the Christian women to the brothels, unfortunately, at the time. Okay, there's another story I found for St. Agatha. I'm still on the same page, don't worry, but there was a similar story I found with the saint called Saint Agatha, whose story just mirrored Saint Lucy's story, because she was sentenced to be placed in a brothel because she rejected a man who desired her as well. So this was essentially the path that a Christian was going to take if they rejected their pagan husband or the desires of a pagan man at the time. So now that she's sentenced to be defiled in a brothel, this is what Lucy said, and I'm quoting here. "No one's body is polluted so as to endanger the soul if it has not pleased the mind. If you were to lift my hand to your idol and so make me offer against my will, I would still be guiltless in the sight of the true God, who judges according to the will and knows all things. If now, against my will, you cause me to be polluted, a twofold purity will be gloriously imputed to me. You cannot bend my will to your purpose. Whatever you do to my body, that cannot happen to me." So the Christian tradition states that when the guards came to take her away, they found her so filled with the Holy Spirit that she was stiff and as heavy as a mountain. They couldn't move her. even when they hitched her to a team of oxen. Even with a dagger through her throat, she prophesied against her persecutor. What we're missing in these early narratives and the traditions, at least until the 15th century, is the story of Lucy being tortured by eye gouging. If you remember what I said at the beginning, she is the patron saint of blindness. And there's this whole story about her missing her eyes. So, and this is what she's known for, but the story doesn't come around until about the 15th century, so quite a bit later. But according to later accounts, before she died, she actually prophesizes and says that these persecutions are going to come to an end really quickly, that Diocletian is no longer going to be in power, he's not going to reign anymore, and that this the Roman emperor, I think his name is Maximian, God forgive, and he too was going to meet his demise. So she's prophesizing all this stuff as they, you know, hold this dagger up to her throat, you know, and they're about to kill her, and it makes, they get so angry with her about this that the judge pretty much orders that her eyes be removed. So that's one story, right? The second version of this is that Lucy takes her own eyes out in order to discourage some sort of persistent suitor who admired her. This is why she is the patron saint of those with eye illnesses or blindness. When her body was prepared for burial in the family mausoleum, it was discovered that her eyes had been miraculously restored. In paintings and statues of St. Lucy, she's frequently shown holding her eyes on a golden plate. Interesting stories here. It's very interesting for me to read about the saints. I personally don't know a lot about them, and I love to hear their stories and, you know, try to understand how they, you know, reached sainthood or what have you. So let's talk a little bit more about patron saints in general. The practice of adopting patron saints dates back to the building of the first public churches in the Roman Empire, most of which were built over the graves of martyrs. The churches were then given the name of the martyr, and the martyr was expected to act as an intercessor for the Christians who worshiped there. So churches are largely dedicated to a patron. So for example, St. Peter is the patron saint of St. Peter's Church, etc. Patron saints are not only advocates for churches, but also they can be the heavenly protector of a nation, a profession, class, clan, occupation, family, or even a person. In addition to Roman Catholicism, patron saints also may be recognized in Eastern Catholicism, Eastern Orthodoxy, I think it's Anglicanism, Lutheranism, etc. Patron saints, they're typically chosen because they have some connection to a particular region, profession, or family. And according to the Catholic Encyclopedia, patron saints may be named for diseases, which typically happens when the saint suffered from the malady or cared for someone who did. Christians also can choose to adopt a saint as their patron saint if they bear their name or if they took the saint's name during the sacrament or confirmation. So here's a question. Do you have to be Christian or Catholic to work with the saints? No, not really. And I mean, I didn't believe that at the outset. But obviously, this is a big time question, right? You, for example, if you're not a Christian, but yet you really love Jesus's message, do you have to be a Christian to call upon the knowledge, the spirit of Jesus? No, you don't, right? We see all the time, for lack of a better word, deities whose messages, whose stories have impacted us so deeply, whose teachings really provide us insight and understanding, yet we may not have been raised in that, you know, specific tradition. It doesn't mean that you can't call upon, work with that spirit. And the same thing goes here too when it comes to saints, right? The only thing is you need to keep in mind that when you're working with saints, it has to be done with respect and dignity, of course. And saints often tend to focus on their gifts and how they're able to serve humanity. One thing to really remember here is that saints, they were once human, and likely when you begin to communicate with them, it's going to have a very humanistic feel and vibe to it, as opposed to, let's say, calling upon a goddess, an ascended master, or the like. There's very, very different feeling and type of communication when you're working with a spirit who has incarnated into this plane. For example, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum, so I'm trying not to be so redundant here, but when you're calling upon your spirit guides, hold on a second, I'm going to take a sip of water. When you're calling upon your spirit guides and you're working with them, the major benefit of working with your spirit guide is that they've incarnated many times. They know what it's like to be here, to suffer, to struggle, to fight, cry, lose, win, all of those things. So their perspective is very helpful in that way. It's not disconnected, right, from how we see and understand. But when you're calling upon a deity who's never incarnated here but still has a really great perspective, it's different, right? It's different. I'm not going to say it's harder to connect, but the perspective sometimes, it's harder to ground here in this world, given how this world functions. So I think the appreciation of working with saints or calling upon them to a certain degree is that they can give you that humanistic perspective, that suffering that most of them tend to go through, the obstacles that have been thrown in their path, right? The maladies that they suffer of the body, etc. They're helpful because they understand that and they've been through that. How they overcame it is another story. That's why you have to be very, very mindful of who you choose to work with. Now, working with saints is unique and it's different depending on the saint that you're going to petition. This is some interesting information that I found when I was doing research. Some saints, they may only work with women. Other saints, as I've read, demand offerings up front. Some require half of the offering in advance, then the other half later, after you've received what it is that you requested. And some saints require very simple offerings, while some may require something very expensive or fancy. And this is such a thing with me because I always, it's such a strange relationship in that way, I can imagine. When I work with my spirit guide, I don't necessarily offer him anything. I feel guilty saying that out loud. He probably really hates me. But I do extend my deep, deep gratitude. I guess I think that way because I know that the offering is really symbolic, right, of your devotion, of your love, of your gratitude. So there's nothing inherently wrong with it. But it is interesting to me as I started to research what some certain saints require, because I've never been requested, or maybe I have in a strange way. That's another day. It's a conversation for another day. Anyway, for most, if not all saints, lighting a candle is one of the easiest ways to petition a saint and is often considered a requirement. It's very common in most Christian and, you know, Catholic places of worship. Candles are often a staple requirement for personal prayer, etc. So, to work with saints often requires a few common things such as the following. Number one, I read that it requires water or a beverage such as coffee or rum. This is so strange to me. Again, it's strange only because it is new. I don't mean to attach a negative connotation to it, but this is something that I found again and again. And I've had friends who actually give offerings to their guides in the form of rum or liquor. So it's very, it's definitely a new world for me. Also candles. Each saint has a preferred color of candle. Flowers. Some saints prefer a specific flower or a color of flower. Food. Cakes or bread are the most common offering required. And then little items. maybe representing what the patron or what the saint is patron of, maybe a token, keys or something. And then prayer, reading prayer cards, perhaps praying while burning a candle in the morning, afternoon, evening, etc. Now, these items are often to be left on an altar, some sort of main altar that's dedicated to that saint. And they're often left there for the duration of the candle burning. In the case of perishable foods or even some sort of water or liquor, whatever it is that you're going to put, the food and the water, what have you, is replenished daily while the candle burns each day. So how do you engage the saints? Well, number one, after you get your candle, after you've decided which saint that you would like to work with or whose help that you need, this relationship would mirror a relationship that you had with your spirit guide, or maybe a relationship that you have even with whoever you're working with, a goddess, an ascended master, maybe, in a way. Forgive me for all the background noise. I have a very sore throat, and yeah. Number one, you're going to want to ask for their intercession. If you're looking for a saint who has gone through similar struggles in the same areas where you struggled, whether it's, I don't know, self-love, faith, forgiveness, compassion, patience, whatever it is, ask for, you know, first identify the right saint. Perhaps build this little altar to them, not as a form of worship. Don't mistake that. It's not worship, it's respect. And then ask for their intercession. Now, I'm sure you're probably thinking, well, why do I want to, you know, am I just establishing this relationship to get something? No, that's not the purpose of this. I think sometimes that people assume when you're working with your guides, angels, or whomever, that you're trying to get something. No, this should be a harmonious and a balanced relationship. Anytime you petition or work with a spirit or a deity or what have you, it is for growth and understanding. If you are struggling, again, I'm just trying to think of something here, maybe with self-love, perhaps you dialogue with the saint, even if at that moment you can't see or hear them, okay? It doesn't matter. Light a candle, dialogue with them, let them know what you're struggling with, what you've been through. How can you see things differently? How can you shift your attention from inner fear to inner love? You know, open up and extend that dialogue. Ask for their help. Because it's not as if all of a sudden you're just going to love yourself the next day after you lit the candle. No, that's not what it is. But this is a dialogue to bring you to understanding. So you can also engage the saints, not just, you know, by communicating, but reading the lives of the saints and becoming very familiar with their story. Everything that you focus on, you know, expands, so absorb and indulge. Again, actively communicate with your saint of choice. Read their biography. You can use prayer cards if you're into that. I'm sure people don't like to hear the word prayer, but asking for help in your heart to heal is another way that you think of working with those prayer cards. You can celebrate the feast day of your patron saint. You can even visit their shrines if you feel called to do that, of your patron saint. And then I'm going to give you information here that I don't think I've ever given to anybody. So if you've made it thus far, then woohoo. So I'm going to share with you a major secret of mine that I hold very dear. This is how I work through problems. This is how I try to come to understanding sometimes. And it's kind of creating my own round table of spirits. Now, I got this idea. Oh, God, the name is totally eluding me from, oh, my God. I cannot. I'll put it in the show notes. I can't remember this dude. I read a lot of his literature. And he talks about, oh, God, it's killing me that I can't remember. Anyway, he talks about how later on in life, when he would meditate, he would start to bring in people that he deeply respected, whose work he respected, or people in life whose work he valued. whether they were, you know, alive or deceased. And he would call them in on like a weekly meeting, okay? And he would call their spirits in, talk to them about things. Sometimes he would talk to them about business, his business, and they would have a blackboard, okay? And then he would invite all of their ideas, and then he would write them down, workshop it together. And he would do this all the time until he said that these spirits kind of took, they had their own personalities. They started to argue with each other. He just said it just took on a life of its own, organically, but it was super helpful to call in the assistance of other spirits who he respected, valued, whose knowledge was very, very useful. And so I took that idea for myself and I started to call in people in history, but also, I never really called a saint, but I am gonna try this. Goddesses that I deeply respect as well, historical figures that I respect, and I've called them into my own personal round table to dialogue with them about things that I've been struggling with, trying to understand how to move forward in a certain direction. Am I focusing my attention on the right priorities? Am I too disorganized? I have a vision for something. What do you guys think? And this is something I've been workshopping with my team that I have invited. And I feel like this is working. And I wanted to throw that out there to you guys today because I definitely want you to try it. It's definitely, again, my secret that I have, but no longer. And you can even do this now with the saints by creating your own round table of saints. So let's say, for example, you wanted Mother Teresa, maybe you want St. Lucy, maybe you want St. Francis of Assisi, and you want to, you know, convene with them to talk about self-love or to talk about healing or whatever it is, I don't know, compassion, and ask them questions, right? But have that communication both ways, not just to like, I was going to say steal their ideas. But the value is that the knowledge that is being poured to you, that is being channeled through them to you, right, is to help you grow. That is the reason for all of this. It's to help you learn and grow and then apply it. That's how you really learn. And that is how wisdom comes, through consistent application. So I invite you guys to have your own round table of figures, and it can be historical figures. You're not limited here. You can call upon goddesses or gods or saints, or I have not done this with fairies or anything else, okay? But people who you look up to, there are a couple of historical figures that I have looked, I for some reason in this lifetime, I have been so obsessed with since I was a kid and to this day, and I have invited them to my round table and they come and they give me, I feel like, the best, whether you call it like spiritual message or the best advice, something that sounds like them, but they see me. And so they give it to me in a way that is useful for me. And that's something else that I want to say here, and I'm glad I remembered, to be very mindful when you call in spirits, because the way they instruct is going to be according to how they were. Right? It's going to be, if they were somebody who was mild-mannered, soft-spoken, then that's the approach that they're going to take with you. So expect that type of feedback from them. But if it's somebody who is very loud and boisterous and aggressive, then you're going to get that as well. And if that doesn't work for you, then you might need to go back to the drawing board and invite your own round table in again. You know, whose values am I trying to emulate? What am I trying to learn from this person? How do I want them to make me a better person? How can I work with them to bring knowledge to light? How can this help me shift my perspective about my life and about how the world functions? How can it help me to open doors for others? How can it help me to be more of service in this direction? So be very mindful, again, because they will teach you from, you know, their own perspective. And it might not correlate, that's not the right word, but it might not it might not flow with your being. So be just be aware of that. You guys, I hope that this has been very helpful for you today. Like, again, I told you, I'm not very knowledgeable about all of the sayings, only a few. But if you are and you want to work with them more closely, definitely study their biographies, definitely light a candle to them and talk to them like I'm talking to you at this moment. There's no wrong words to say. Have a discussion and invite them into your dreams, invite them into your life, perhaps do an offering. I'll give you this very last story that I had no plans to give. When I say do an offering, etc., as I told you at the beginning, I didn't really believe in offerings, but I definitely believe in lighting candles. However, when I was channeling a goddess a little while ago, and I kind of asked her if there was something, you know, as a courtesy and as respect for her showing up for me, I asked her, you know, is there anything that I can do for you? And she said two things, which I thought was really cool. And the first one was flowers. And the second one was art. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is really neat. I would have never expected it. And I would have never thought to do it until I started reading all this stuff about goddess devotion, etc. And the day that I did that, she definitely came to me in my dreams and was talking to me. So I think, you know, it's a sign of mutual respect and appreciation to do these things. So if you want to work with St. Lucy, I don't know about St. Catherine, I hate to say, then again, if you can't find candles with their faces on them, print a sheet of paper with the face of them on it from online, tape it to the candle, put their name on it, light the candle and start talking to them and call them in, and then proceed as you will. You guys, I really hope this has been very helpful and beneficial for you today. Just remember that, you know, sayings are supposed to light the way. They're supposed to enrich your faith and deepen your faith as well, and whatever faith that you have at the moment. Please, everybody, have a great rest of your week. And stay cool because it's really hot. All right, bye-bye.